Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. Approximately every 2,500 years, a new teacher brings a body of teaching to humanity that is suited to our needs at that particular time. Usually this takes place at the end of an age. Right now, as the age of Pisces declines and our solar system aligns with the constellation Aquarius, new energies are beginning to make themselves felt. As these Aquarian energies of sharing and justice stream into our planet, the need for change can be seen more clearly. A period of chaos ensues as the old order lessens its grip on humanity, and the impulse of sharing, justice and peace inspires us to move forward in evolution as a united group.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our program. And today we start with an article from Share International magazine, and it's titled, "The Fight for Bread Became a Fight for Freedom." And it consists of excerpts from a speech during the United Nations Security Council open debate on women, peace and security on the 29th of October 2019 on behalf of the NGO Working Group on Women, Peace and Security. And this is from the United Nations in New York. My name is Ala Salah. I'm 22 years old and I grew up in Khartoum. Before the revolution, I was a student of architectural engineering. I did not grow up around politics, but in an ordinary middle-class family. My mother is a designer and my father owns a construction company. But as I would walk to university every day and see my fellow citizens around me struggling to get food and medicine, half of the country living in poverty, how could one not become political?
In December last year, 2018, our fight for bread became a fight for our freedom. I stand before you today to tell you my story, which is one shared by the thousands of ordinary women and men of Sudan who left their homes, their schools and their daily work to take to the streets, to face bullets and tear gas, who risked their lives and their livelihoods to demand an end to dictatorship. My journey to you was forged by a long line of Sudanese women who have fought for peace and justice in our communities for decades, well before we arrived at this important moment in the future of Sudan. I wouldn't be here without them. I address you as a member of MANSAM, MANSAM, a coalition of Sudanese women's civil and political groups, and on behalf of the NGO Working Group on Women, Peace and Security. My statement will focus on two key issues. Number one, women's meaningful participation and protection of women's rights. And two, accountability and disarmament.
Women have played an important role in Sudan at pivotal moments in our history, in opposing colonial rule, fighting for the right to vote, as well as in recent struggles against the dictatorship of Omar al-Bashir. It has also taken extraordinary courage to fight for basic rights, to wear trousers, to leave their hair uncovered, to voice their opinions on social media without fear, or to share a meal with male friends, all of which were criminalized by the former regime's public order laws. These laws were designed to squash dissent and also to target women, particularly from the most marginalized and working class communities, such as tea and food sellers, whose working tools could be confiscated without explanation, who faced penalties and who could be jailed.
Women and young people were at the forefront of the recent protests, often outnumbering men and accounting for 70% of protesters. I was one of many women chanting, singing and walking with my fellow citizens through the streets. Women-led resistance committees and sit-ins planned protest routes and disobeyed curfews even in the midst of a declared state of emergency that left them vulnerable to security forces. Many were tear-gassed, threatened, assaulted and thrown in jail without any charge or due process. Both women and men also faced sexual harassment and were raped. Women also faced retaliation from their own families for participating in the protests. Women served as key members of the Forces of Freedom and Change, FFC, and helped shape the Declaration of Freedom and Change, a roadmap for Sudan's transition from military to civilian rule.
However, despite this visible role, despite their courage and their leadership, women have been sidelined in the formal political process in the months following the revolution. Even in the past, when we have achieved a seat at the table, women represented 31% of parliamentarians in 2018. They were often without real influence and left out of decision-making circles. Despite women standing ready to actively contribute to the political negotiations that began in April this year between the Military Council and the Forces of Freedom and Change, only one woman participated in the talks, that too only after strong advocacy by women's groups. Now, unsurprisingly, women's representation in the current governance structure falls far below our demand of 50% parity, and we are sceptical that the 40% quota of the still-to-be-formed Legislative Council will be met.
For the last 30 years, women's bodies and rights have been policed. Backlash has been swift and violent when patriarchal norms have been challenged. Women activists, politicians, human rights defenders and peace builders continue to be systematically attacked and targeted, including through sexual violence, which has forced many out of the country entirely. Additionally, women's organisations are at the front line of meeting basic needs and protecting rights in conflict-affected areas. But security restrictions and obstructive administrative requirements prevent critical work from being carried out in areas such as the Blue Nile and Nuba Mountains. In particular, humanitarian access to Jebel Marra, a conflict area in Darfur, notorious for the routine use of mass rape by security forces to terrorize women and girls, continues to be a major challenge in the provision of life-saving services for those communities.
Given women's pivotal role in working towards peace and development, in the promotion of human rights and in providing humanitarian assistance to communities in need, there is no excuse for us not to have an equal seat at every single table. If we are not represented at the peace table, and if we don't have a meaningful voice in Parliament, our rights will not be guaranteed. After decades of struggle and all that we risked to peacefully end Bashir's dictatorship, gender inequality is not and will never be acceptable to the women and girls of Sudan. I hope it is equally unacceptable to the members of this chamber. Sudan is one of the most heavily militarized countries in the world. We do not need more firearms, yet many governments continue to sell weapons that directly contribute to and perpetuate conflict, ongoing violations of human rights and forced displacement. The widespread availability of weapons in my country is one of the factors fueling violence and insecurity for all people, including women and girls.
As this body well knows, accountability and access to justice have been all but absent in my country. The existing discrimination and inequality women face, coupled with conflict and violence over decades, has resulted in women being subjected to a wide range of human rights violations, including sexual and gender-based violence on an epic scale. These crimes contributed to the indictment of our ousted president for genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. But violence against women did not end with the end of al-Bashir's reign. As recent as early September, seven women living in the Shangil Tobaya displaced persons camp in Darfur were raped by armed men. These women join the thousands of women and girls who have borne the brunt of the violence carried out across the country. Now women are saying enough. It is time for accountability and justice for all crimes committed before, during and after the revolution.
This is the least that can be done to honour those who have been killed or who have suffered atrocities. The strength of the revolution came from the representation of diverse voices from across the country. This inclusion is now integral to the legitimacy of the transition process. Unless the political process reflects and embraces the diversity of our society, women's groups, civil society, resistance groups, ethnic and religious minorities, those who have been displaced and people with disabilities, no agreement will reflect our collective aspirations. In conclusion, we urge the Security Council and the international community to 1. Press the transitional government, forces of freedom and change, and armed groups to support the full, equal and meaningful participation of women. We call for at least 50% representation of Sudanese women across all peace processes in the current negotiations and at all levels of the government, and urge you, the international community, to support our demand in all your engagement with the transitional government.
Number 2, actively monitor the situation in Darfur and halt the drawdown of the peacekeeping mission until the security situation stabilizes. Protection of civilians, including those in internally displaced camps, can be ensured, and conditions for safe and voluntary returns are met. Number 3, support accountability and end impunity. The transitional government must fully support an independent international fact-finding mission to investigate and hold all perpetrators of human rights violations, including sexual and gender-based violence, accountable. Omar al-Bashir must immediately be transferred to the International Criminal Court. The transitional government must ratify the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women without any reservations.
Support civil society and ensure women, human rights defenders, are able to carry out their work unhindered and without fear of reprisals. End the use of lethal and excessive force against protesters. Number 5, stop fueling conflict. Finally, we implore all countries to stop the export of arms to my country when there is a risk that they will be used in violation of international humanitarian and human rights law, including to perpetrate sexual and gender-based violence in line with the Arms Treaty Treaty. In conclusion, I would like to leave you with a slogan that grew loud with our recent protests. Freedom, peace and justice. Revolution is the people's choice. And I have a little footnote here from the NGO Working Group on Women, Peace and Security, advocates for the equal and full participation of women in all efforts to create and maintain international peace and security. And you can look that up if you like on womenpeacesecurity.org. And this was formed in 2000s, following the adoption of Security Council Resolution 1325, that was in 2000. And the NGO WG now focuses on implementation of all Security Council resolutions that address this issue. The NGO WG serves as a bridge between women's human rights defenders working in conflict-affected situations and policymakers at UN headquarters.
So our next article is from the December 2019 issue of the magazine, and it's titled Everyday Ubuntu, Living Together the African Way by Mungi Nomani, and it's a book review by Phyllis Power. In the foreword to his book, Archbishop Desmond Tutu writes of his sense of pride and some relief that his granddaughter, the author Mungi Nomani, is passing on lessons he taught to his children, her parents, and that they passed on to her, the concept and practice of Ubuntu. Ubuntu is an African word and concept that should resonate everywhere, although it has not come into the everyday language of the rest of the world. This book is a good introduction. What does it mean? The qualities of Desmond Tutu perhaps encapsulate Ubuntu. When we think of him, we have an image of a man overflowing with a boundless love of humanity and a sense of humour without a trace of malice that derives from that innate love. Our image of Tutu is all the more powerful when we remember the horrors of the decades of apartheid that he lived through in South Africa, and that he has come through still smiling and still loving. He says, I knew from an early age that being a person with Ubuntu was one of the highest accolades one could receive. So Ubuntu encapsulates all our aspirations about how to live well together. We feel it when we connect with others and share a sense of humanity. I'm only because you are, Nomani says. Ubuntu is the founding principle of my grandfather's life.
The book is divided into 14 lessons on how to live in the world with Ubuntu. Each precept is accompanied by practical everyday suggestions about how to practice them, small steps we can take towards being a person with Ubuntu. The lessons include, see yourself in other people. Absolutely everyone on this earth is of equal value. Nomani emphasizes that the anti-apartheid movement was not an anti-white movement, but a struggle for all South Africans to be seen and treated as equal. She suggests that we try to view others not just via a prism of equality, but also of gratitude, acknowledging all those who have helped us in any way, psychological as well as practical. Put yourself in the shoes of others. Don't make swift judgment. Take time to listen and always consider others' point of view and motivation.
Strength lies in unity in our political and social acts. We can always achieve more in unity with others than individually, knowing that others have the same aspiration for a better life and that we are not isolated but part of the whole human family. Nomani quotes Joe Cox, the UK Member of Parliament who was murdered in the street in 2016. We are far more united and have more in common than that which divides us. To build on that sense of unity, Nomani suggests we look for any ways to join with others for a cause or a shared humanitarian work. Allied to this is the fundamental aspect of Ubuntu, respect for others and also for oneself, the need for a sense of personal dignity. To believe in the good of everyone was a lesson taught her by her grandfather and by Nelson Mandela in his struggles against apartheid. Mandela, who suffered 20 years in prison, 27 years I should say, said, people are human beings produced by the society in which they live. You encourage people by seeing the good in them. This could be good advice for teachers and others concerned with the young. Encourage and respect rather than disparage and condemn.
Choose to see with a wider perspective. Here Nomani cites the extraordinary truth and reconciliation hearings in South Africa, held to allow everyone who wished to tell their stories of their experience under apartheid. The world watched in awe as South Africa put Ubuntu into action, purging its wounds live on radio and television, and then granting amnesty to those who had taken part in political crimes. Seen as the only way of building unity in that bitterly divided society, the hearings also demonstrated the power of forgiveness, but at the same time the need to acknowledge reality, however painful. An interesting thought is to choose hope over optimism. As a generalized emotion, optimism can easily be lost, whereas hope involves trust and the faith never to give up in spite of the odds. Nomani quotes Mandela again, we must accept finite disappointment, but not lose infinite hope. And like love, hope is a choice.
At the same time, Nomani urges us to find humour in our humanity. Laughter is humanising, particularly at oneself and in challenging situations. Again, her model is her grandfather, who would make jokes to ease the most tense situations. Connectedness, love, hope, faith in oneself and others. With Ubuntu in our world, every day is a new world and a new start. This is a gently inspiring book. Its look matches its content with a beautifully designed red and gold hardcover and colourful pages. It would make a lovely seasonal gift whose everyday lessons could last a lifetime. And the details about that book is the author is Mungi Nomani. The title is Everyday Ubuntu, which is U-B-U-N-T-U, Living Together the African Way, and it's from Bantam Press.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thank you very much for listening. If you'd like to know a little more, you could go to our website, share-international.org, or you may write us at sharenz@yahoo.com. Thank you once again, and love and blessings to you all.
your language.